You're listening to Live from Lord North Street, a podcast from the Institute of Economic Affairs. I'm Kate Andrews, news editor at the IEA. Today I'm talking to the IEA's head of education, Dr. Steve Davies, on the basic income, a policy idea that's gathered a lot of support across the political spectrum. Coming up, Steve discusses the benefits of a universal basic income as a replacement to the welfare system, but also highlights some of his skepticism around how politicians might use the basic income during election time to gain votes. If you like what you hear, be sure to check out our website, iea.org.uk, and subscribe to our YouTube channel, username IEA London. Steve, the basic income has amazingly found support across the spectrum, from the Green Party to many free marketeers advocating for it. Have we finally found consensus?
Well, this is one of the interesting things about the whole idea. It does indeed command support from people right across the ideological spectrum. So it's supported by the Green Party. Historically, it was advocated by a man called Robert Theobald, who came from the American left. It's also been advocated by people, however, on the free market right, such as Charles Murray, for example, who published a book a few years ago advocating such a move. Milton Friedman was historically associated with this idea, as was James Buchanan. So yes, indeed, in some sense, there is a consensus. Now, that does conceal different reasons for supporting it, but it is quite striking just how many people of how many persuasions are actually interested in this idea or think it's a major development. That partly reflects a shared perception that the welfare system we have, and in particular the version that we have in the United Kingdom, which is dominated by the use of means-tested benefits and income supplements, is proving to be counterproductive and actually disadvantageous for the recipients of the system rather than a benefit to them. So people from both left and right are very struck by the way in which it, for example, creates very powerful perverse incentives so that it just does not make sense for people to increase their income or even take a job at all if they're in receipt of some kind of means-tested benefit. The way in which it extends control by the state over welfare recipients, this was a point made many, many years ago, for example, by the Trotskyist author Bill Jordan, who wrote a series of very interesting books about what was wrong with the present welfare system, and he again was an advocate of a basic income as a means of replacing it. So there's that general negative perception, but there's also, I think, on both sides, a positive perception, a view that there are all kinds of positive reasons why you might want to move towards a basic income. And it's also seen as being a response to a number of more recent developments, above all the rapid growth of automation and artificial intelligence and the perceived disappearance of a huge range of commonly existing jobs without anything really replacing them. If that is the case, then there does come to be a question about how for the cycle of production and consumption to continue, you distribute enough income to people for them to purchase the products that are being produced, given that this will no longer be done through the wage system. So there's all those different reasons why people across the ideological spectrum like it. And in one sense, yes, there is indeed a consensus. Interestingly, of course, it's also being tried out in many parts of the world. This is definitely a public policy idea that has begun to reach the threshold of widespread acceptability. So there have been experiments in Canada and in India, for example. There's a very significant experiment being tried in Finland at the moment. And bearing in mind how these go, it may well be that sooner or later, and probably sooner rather than later, we'll see a major move by a significant country to actually roll this out as a national policy. The crucial thing to realise is that for all advocates of a basic income, it's meant to replace all of the existing state benefits. That's a crucial point. It's meant to replace unemployment benefit, sickness benefit, income supplement, disability benefit, old age pensions, the whole lot, in fact, in other words. That's the whole idea. You take all of the spending that the state currently does on various kinds of income transfers and you roll them up into one single payment, the basic income.
A lot of this makes sense. The current welfare state can often be mistaken for a nanny state. I think many on the right feel very uncomfortable looking at people who are poorer and watching them be told what they can buy, where they can live, what they can do. So in that way, the basic income gets around that issue and gives poorer people back some of that autonomy.
Yes, it gives people autonomy in all sorts of ways, actually. It means that you're no longer being controlled by the state giving out welfare and then attaching strings to it, which is almost inevitable if that's the system you have, because for good reasons, the taxpayers want to know that their money is going to be spent in a way which they approve. It gets away from that. It also creates autonomy in other ways, which people on the left are very keen on, but which I also support. So, for example, one of the effects of a basic income is that it gives people the ability to choose not to take certain jobs. So it means that it gives what is known in the American vernacular as screw you money, if you will. You have the ability to refuse to take on certain kind of jobs if the condition or the pay is simply really bad or very poor. What that would do, of course, is give enormous incentives to employers to improve their productivity by investing in machinery, maybe, or doing things in a more effective way or finding other ways of doing it. So, yes, it can be seen very much as a move that gives people greater self-determination, greater control over their lives, and which removes the threat or likelihood of complete deprivation or destitution, so that people can then more freely plan what they want to do with their life.
Yes, it's that free planning that's so crucial, and I could also see it being very beneficial for groups that historically have been more oppressed. I'm thinking in particular single mothers, potentially having the opportunity to choose when to go back to work with more flexibility could be a very good thing for their families and for society as a whole. So we've spoken quite fondly of the basic income, but Steve, I'm under the impression that actually you've gone from being a big advocate of it to being a bit more skeptical, not rejecting it, but more skeptical. So how did that transition take place?
Yes, before I explain my own intellectual position and odyssey, so to speak, it's worth saying that just as there are people across the ideological spectrum in favour of the idea of a basic income, there are people across the ideological spectrum who dislike it. One of the very common objections from people of all persuasions is that a basic income is too expensive. Another objection is that it will destroy work incentives. The idea is that if you can simply live without working, why is anybody going to bother to work? And that has led some of the people who advocate it, in fact, to say that it has to be combined with a work test. That, in other words, you would have to be doing some kind of work to actually qualify for it, which is something I personally would be strongly opposed to, and I think the majority of advocates would be opposed to if this were to happen. There's also an argument that it doesn't tie the creation of wealth to actual productive activity, that it separates the two. So those are all objections that you find from all parts of the spectrum. My own sort of increasing scepticism is slightly different. I should explain that back in the 1980s, I wrote a pamphlet for the Centre for Policy Studies, which actually advocated a basic income as a way of dealing with the by then already obvious crisis of means-tested welfare benefits here in the United Kingdom. I was partly influenced by reading a book which the Institute of Economic Affairs was slightly involved with called Instead of the Dole by a lady called Hermione Parker, which offered a fully costed form of or basic income scheme. And at the time, I made the kind of arguments that I've made already about how it would increase autonomy, it would reduce bureaucratic control, it would be much more cost-effective than the incredibly complicated system that we now have. However, I have become more sceptical for two reasons. The first is that, as I said a moment ago, a basic income, by definition, must replace all of the existing benefits that exist in the system. Otherwise, it just becomes an add-on and you don't get the full benefit. Plus, that makes the cost very excessive. Now, even here in the UK, there's at least one benefit currently in existence which could not be put into a basic income. That's housing benefit, which hardly existed at all when I wrote it, but which is now one of the largest benefits. That couldn't be incorporated into it because of the huge variation in local house prices between one region and another. And as long as we have a housing shortage, there's no prospect of getting rid of housing benefit. So absent a major change in housing policy, which we of course should have anyway, I don't see how you can avoid having that continue even when you have a basic income, which reduces a great deal of the use. I suspect that politically, it would be very difficult not to keep certain other benefits in addition to a basic income, and that defeats a lot of the object. The other big problem, which worries me much more, is that the basic income almost certainly would be bid up by the political process. The problem is that almost inevitably politicians would face very, very strong incentives when it came to election time to offer a higher level of the basic income than their rivals. And almost certainly this would lead to it to be bid up, and all very likely bid up to a point where it would start to have very significant negative effects on the economy as a whole, macroeconomic effects of one kind or other. So although I am still attracted to the basic idea, I'm increasingly doubtful about what you might call the politics of a basic income. And I think that therefore, in order for it to work, it would have to be made part of a constitutional settlement so that it would not become part of the regular to and forth of everyday politics. And of course, achieving that is very, very difficult because it requires an extremely wide consensus across society at the outset.
We've already seen that kind of politicalization with things like the national living wage. The minimum wage was one thing set by the Low Pay Commission and monitored by the Low Pay Commission to try to adjust with how businesses would react. But then Chancellor Osborne brought in the national living wage, and so every time you got a new election, you would naturally
Precisely.
See. And so that certainly could happen with the basic income. That is definitely a concern.
And if I could add, another problem is, for example, the one that came to light during the recent referendum in Switzerland on whether or not to introduce a minimum income guarantee. And the issue there was the fear that it would be given not just to Swiss citizens, but to anyone resident in Switzerland. And the great fear was that then if Switzerland did this on its own, it would lead to massive immigration into Switzerland, which already, by the way, has the highest proportion of foreign-born inhabitants of any country in Europe, or indeed the whole OECD. And what that also reveals is the rather destructive way in which a minimum income guarantee could play out against the politics of immigration and popular movement. Mm-hmm. It would almost certainly be defined as a citizenship good, and this I think would raise again all sorts of difficult issues. The obvious question is, what's the alternative? And I think the alternative that again would be put forward by people across the spectrum is to rather actually go back to a strictly contributory system where welfare entitlements and transfers are based upon prior contributions made to some kind of collective fund. This is the system that William Beveridge introduced in the Beveridge Report, and it was meant to be the dominant system, and it was indeed up until the 1970s in the UK. And it's the system, or the view of the system, I should say, that still commands overwhelming popular support in the UK. That's the obvious alternative. There are obvious problems with that as well. In particular, the problem is that it doesn't deal very well with the different work-life experiences of men and women, which still remain significantly different. And it doesn't deal with the problem of how to deal with the situation of people who have low pay from work or who have some other problems in getting an income, which isn't covered by some kind of collective insurance scheme, which that sort of system is. So that's why that has problems. But that's the other alternative that people often put forward to a basic income.
I just still find it so fascinating that in a time of great political division, there is somewhat of a consensus when it comes to things like welfare reform coming from the left and the right. And in that sense, it seems like it shouldn't be an idea that's abandoned, although clearly, as you've highlighted, there are some issues around it.
Yes, I think this is true. And I think that that means this is, in one sense, a great political opportunity for political entrepreneurs, because this is an area where it may well be possible to build a quite wide-ranging public consensus around a significant policy amendment, if you like, introduction of new policies and a subsequent policy regime. That's actually quite important, because I do think that welfare policy is one of the areas where you probably do need a widespread consensus, because significant and repeated change in the welfare system is highly disruptive, not only to all the individuals involved who are affected by it, but also to the wider economy, because it has all kinds of effects on the pattern of demand, the nature of employment, the way the labour market works. So it's much better to have a very wide-based agreement amongst parties from different political and philosophical standpoints as to what the welfare system is and how it should work. And as you say, the fact that there is such agreement between people who, in other ways, are strongly opposed to each other, that this is a good way forward, that we might well be able to create a functioning consensus, which is one of the reasons why I think it probably is worth exploring it, and hopefully some of the kind of experiments that have been taken will give us firmer evidence as to whether or not this will actually work.
Steve, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.